This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
In the Box on TSN 1200, recapping yesterday and giving you a head start on today.
Max Domi has been everywhere here in this hockey game, Shane.
He's had some quickness in his step today.
Trent Frederick's shot, that rings the post. Check. He'll let it go, set up for Domi, scores!
Here's Paul, Paul's at a dance, he scores! Nick Paul, what a goal! And it's 2-1 Tampa Bay!
CeCe to Connor McDavid, peering inside, dishing, CeCe shoots and scores! 1-0 Edmonton in game 7, this crowd explodes!
In the Box.
The Boston Celtics have done the hardest thing there is to do in sports. They have taken the title belt off the defending world champion in game 7 in the second round. The final score, Boston 109, Milwaukee 81.
The Mavericks win it 123-90. The Mavericks take the series in 7 games and on to San Francisco.
TSN 1200.
15 seconds with the man advantage. Fox, for Panarin, top the right circle, moves in, shoots, off the, it's in! Artemi Panarin scores, and the Rangers have won game 7 in overtime.
Unbelievable.
Here's Lindholm, the good roll. Near quarter to Kachuk, behind the net to Gaudreau. He walks in front and drops. Lindholm shoots it up. Sure, takes the right shoulder, save Gaudreau, scores!
The sea of red erupts. 4 wins down, 12 to go. The Calgary Flames eliminate the Dallas Stars.
Now with Graham Creech, here's Steve Lloyd.
Oh, welcome to it. A little bit of a late start today. Hope you enjoy coverage of the World Hockey Championships from Finland as Canada improved to 3-0 with a 5-1 win over Slovakia. We'll take you, as we usually do, until 2, and then hand it over for a full edition of The Drive this afternoon. We'll have more World Championship coverage later in the week, carrying all the games here on TSN 1200. Sens fans, this will be the quick and dirty. There are 3 members of the Sens on the team. Nick Holden had an assist today. There you go. 5-1 win for Canada. Now 3-0 after starting 0-3 last year, where they ended up coming back and winning the gold medal thanks to the exploits of Connor Brown and Nick Paul. We'll talk about Nick Paul. He had quite the weekend, quite the game 7. And I'll say this as we roll through those highlights for yesterday, right? I would say you want to talk about a disparity in drama. The game 7s in the NBA yesterday versus the game 7s in the NHL. Wow. To have 2 game 7s back-to-back go to overtime, just fantastic viewing. And then how rare it is to see absolute blowouts in a game 7 in the NBA, and we saw 2 of those in back-to-back. It was a bit of an odd day that way. We'll sink our teeth into it. Look back to the other game 7s. We had 5 in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Round 2 starts tomorrow night. So we get a rare off night from the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. It is Steve Lloyd. I'm back from early morning duty. JR's back in the saddle this week at TSN 1200 with Simmer and Hammer. Creature, he's here. He was here with Kenny and Matty Vowles for one day last week. Kenny's here producing. Welcome to In the Box. You can reach us at 12-1200. Your standard text message rates apply. Eric Macromello will join us in our next segment, as he usually does, at noon on Mondays. Gord Wilson, as he usually does, at 1, as our Sens and NHL insider get goodies thoughts on the Stanley Cup playoffs so far. Creature, good morning. I hesitated because it's almost afternoon. Good morning. It's been a while. How you doing?
I'm terrific. Had an unreal weekend. It was just solid across the board. And I'm honestly lost. I can't focus on anything else right now because I just saw a tweet about teeing up the AJ Marcotte pickleball match. And now all I can focus on is what was the result. My money's on Terry. But yeah, that's completely stolen my attention from you here, Lloydie, because I saw the video posted teeing up. That it might be mentioned on the 6 o'clock news. And that's all I can focus on. What happened between Terrell and Aaron John?
I saw it. Our friend Josh, I saw it come across my timeline as he tagged me on that. So it has been 7 years since the Moonies Bay massacre, and now it's the return engagement in doubles pickleball. Now, I am not a pickleball aficionado. Is there such a thing as singles pickleball, or is it always doubles?
Cannot confirm.
Kenny?
Kenny's shaking.
Good morning. Help us out.
Hi,
Kenny?
I don't know.
Come on.
I've never played pickleball in my life.
All right.
That's not something that's on my list to get to anytime soon. Maybe once I reach Terry's age and had a couple of hip replacements, I'll get into it. It'll be good.
Just a quick Google search tells you that pickleball is a racket paddle sport that is created by combining elements of several other racket sports. Two or four players use solid paddles to hit a perforated ball over the net. So there you go.
Now, but this league, and I know our good friend Scoobs, Matt Scooby, runs this in-house for everybody that works in the building down at 87 George. I think that is strictly a doubles league, though, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Scoobs creates the teams, names the teams, and apparently does a bang-up job as commissioner. Lee had him on the drive the first week of the season, and Scoobs said that only one person's giving him a headache so far to start the league. Can you guess who that was?
Is he playing right now?
Yes.
And you know that's true. That he's not just saying that for a joke. I can only imagine what the complaint could have been, or complaints.
I think it had to do with rescheduling times, or and then a racket complaint or something. I think he came into the building to get some practice in, and Scooby didn't have the rackets here, so there was a fuss about that. Apparently, I don't know.
That's too perfect. All right, so we'll get an update on that. I'm sure over the next couple of hours, see how that went with the return match. This time it's pickleball. Last time it was a 200 meter at Moody's Bay. It didn't go well for Mr. Jackie Beck. All right, that's it. That was a quick hey, how you doing? First segment. We gotta go. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, this being coming up on noon on a Monday, our good friend Eric Macromella will stop by for Out of Order. Get Eric's thoughts on the Stanley Cup playoffs and maybe pick his brain about. You know, this is the first foray, right, with the new American deal with TNT and ESPN, and you know how the ratings are looking for that, and just how the coverage, you know, has changed since NBC / Versus had it forever. So we'll touch on that about Eric, and what's going on with Drew Brees as well, right? That was an interesting couple of days, and I think there's still more information to come on that. So Eric will join us in our next segment. Gord Wilson, little Sens and Stanley Cup playoff talk with Goody. As our Sens at NHL Insider, that'll come up at around 1 o'clock this afternoon. We will get to your text messages as well. Send them in at 12-1200. Your standard text message rates apply. In the Box continues in a moment on TSN 1200.
This podcast is brought to you by Bodog.net.
Don't miss a chance to play at Bodog.net. When the odds are stacked against you, post-game tastes that much sweeter. Bodog.net, your source of free casino games, poker strategies, and live sports odds.
Eric McRamella.
He is a slime. If he's allowed to go free, then something really wrong is going on.
Mr. Kirkland, you are out of order.
You're out of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order. They're out of order.
Sir, you're out of order.
Out of order. I show you out of order. You don't know what out of order is, Mr.
Steve Lloyd.
I'd show you, but I'm too old. I'm too tired. I'm too blind. If I were the man I was 5 years ago, I'd take a flamethrower to this place.
All right, 12:01. Pretty much starting the show. We had that very brief segment after the World Championship coverage. We said hello to you. It's myself, Steve Lloyd. It's Grant Preach. It's producer Kenny Walls. And then we're right into our first guest. And he's on time. Eric Macromella for Out of Order right now, joining us on that Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Eric, good afternoon. How are you in this muggy Monday?
My man, why would I not be on time? I'm always on time. I mean, I'm right here. I'm waiting for you. I spend my entire Monday just sitting, looking at my phone beginning at 8 o'clock, just in case you decide to hop on the air earlier and call me. I'm here.
All right. There you go. It's all good. Now, we can go in many different directions, but I'm going to go in a direction that kind of relates to, you and I spent quite a bit of time on this on Offside last week, and that's the Tom Brady money, the 10-year deal.
for his new media deal that will kick in whenever his playing days come to an end. And you and I, we got right into, you know, Tony Romo. Did he kind of changed the game with when he came in and the money he was making, and Aikman's got it. Anyways, it's now we've got kind of a cascade of events, and now Tom Brady is going to be making more money than he ever made playing football on this 10-year deal whenever he decides to retire, maybe after this upcoming season. And my kind of pivot to freshen up this conversation, what do you make of the news from Drew Brees that was reported over the weekend that he is leaving NBC after just 1 year? And Brees took to social media. He didn't really put the fire out saying, I'm definitely not coming back to play. He left that option open, and he just basically said everything's on the table, but it does seem clear that he's not staying with NBC. Just a thought from you. How did you like Brees as an analyst? He was widely panned as a color analyst, but for the most part, he was on the desk. Do you think this is maybe NBC? They're kind of happy that this is the parting of ways?
But it was reported really as a mutual parting of the ways. But we've all seen that episode, the episode of Seinfeld, where no breakup is really mutual. There's always one party that initiates the breakup, and they had plans for Brees working in the booth. And I suspect, like everybody else, that game that he called or the analyst for, they were not impressed. And a lot of us were not impressed. He was not very good. And while you can improve when you do that, there certainly is a ceiling. And so you're just assessing his potential for growth and improvement. And he wasn't very strong.
I would say you need to hit a floor, right?
Yeah.
Initially. And he didn't hit a floor.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when Tony Romo came in at the beginning, very first game, he was, his performance was outstanding and frankly unprecedented. And no one would be better than him, including Tom Brady. It's just, Tony Romo was just designed to do this type of work. Collinsworth is very good at what he does. Drew Brees was not very good at what he did. And working the panel, he was fine. But there was nothing, I think, that was entirely compelling for the viewer watching Drew Brees. And so the writing was on the wall, I think, for him. And I think he understood that his future was not with NBC. There's a chance that another network might pick him up. But based upon that performance, I don't think that, you know, it's something they'd be enthusiastic about. I always think back to Witten when he came out of when he left the Cowboys and came in the booth, and he was unintelligible. I don't know what language he was speaking in terms of NFL games, but it most certainly wasn't English. It made absolutely no sense. You needed that translator or that guy who did sign language from Nelson Mandela's funeral to really do sign to make anything he was saying make any sense. He was gone after 1 year, played for the Cowboys, will never work in a booth again. And so networks understand that while there's room for improvement, you can only improve so much.
What do you make of Drew Brees' tweet? Do you believe there's any chance that he does play football again?
You know, I think that when he dispatched that tweet, it was designed to throw a lot of potential options at the end user or the fan or whatever to make it seem like he hasn't made up his mind about going back to NBC. I suspect, however, NBC has made up its mind about Drew Brees. So perhaps he's trying to control the narrative a little bit and to alter context to favor him, and that's understandable. I would be surprised to see him back with NBC. I don't see it. I think that basically the plan to have him in the booth is not going to work. And then insofar as Drew Brees goes, yeah, I understand that. You know, I was down for the Super Bowl in 2013 with the press pass, and that was in New Orleans. It was the 49ers against the Ravens. And I saw Drew Brees down there a number of times. The city is small enough that you bump into everybody all the time. He is an absolute god in Louisiana. And I can't even sort of understate that. I mean, overstate it, excuse me. He wherever he goes, he is the focal point. They love Drew Brees. So, you know, there are many options for him with respect to keeping busy. I just don't think it's in the booth.
So this is the tweet he put out. Despite speculation from media about my future this fall, I'm currently undecided. I may work for NBC. I may play football again. I may focus on business and philanthropy. I may train for the pickleball tour, senior golf tour, coach my kids, or all of the above. I'll let you know. And I think you nailed it with your last answer there, Eric, in that a phrase that you will often utter when we have wide-ranging discussions about anything sports, business-related here, or legally, right? This has a profile for settlement, doesn't it? In that Drew Brees, maybe this is all about he would like to maybe get a number from NBC to get out from under the contract because they've told them they're minimizing his role because they're not happy with his performance. And maybe this is all about getting that number so we just walk away clean.
Yeah, I mean, when you, and I'm glad you read the tweet because in that tweet he says working for NBC, but he's intentionally general with respect to what working for NBC means. It could continue to be working the desk as an analyst, on Sunday night, on the Sunday night football broadcast before the game actually broadcasts, so the pregame, or it could be selling popcorn. I don't know, at NBC. It could be anything, but it's not work in the booth. And if it was, I suspect he would stick around. And just like you have just mentioned now, he likely has been told by NBC, you know, it's not going to work out in the way that you want it to work. Perhaps you can come back in your, you know, in your current role, but that may not be something he's interested in. And he's someone who is accustomed to success and achieving a certain outcome that hasn't worked out here. And so, you know, he may be mulling over, okay, what do I want to do with my future? But he is definitely trying to control context and the narrative by way of that tweet. That's the only reason why he sends out that tweet. It's really with a view to, it's an attempt at damage control.
Now, with this still unfolding, it kind of reminds me on a much smaller scale, obviously, we're talking about in Canada. Do you both remember Creature and Eric? Remember when Ty Domi was briefly with TSN? Right, and TSN hired Ty Domi to be a student, and it was a big. They made a big deal about it, and Ty Domi, and who was just coming off his career and was a very big name, obviously in Toronto and through hockey, everybody knew who Ty Domi was, and it started with he was like kind of featured big panelist, and then it just wasn't working, and they went through about three or four different things, and it got to the point where at the very end, I think they just had Duffy and Ty Domi. They tried, all right. Can we get a minute out of you? You know, there's something very direct that we'll pre-record and we'll air and we're going to name it Ty's whatever. And then that still was like, you know what? It's still not working. And then it just seems like Drew Brees, right? Start him on the desk and you're insulated because you're with other people and, you know, everybody expect to get a little bit better. He was okay, right? And then the plan was to put him in the booth like, oh, man. And now NBC's thinking, what's next here? What do we do? What do we do to keep the name that is Drew Brees and we've signed him to a multi-year deal? How do we make this work? And they've let him know that it's not going to be, as you said, the way you thought it was going to go. And now you're probably just going to see a conscious uncoupling, Eric, at some point here.
Yes, and they may indeed hire Gwyneth Paltrow. I'm looking at it now online. The TSN press release, September 19th, 2006. Announcing the hiring of Ty Domi. So thanks for that reminder. And he didn't, I don't think he lasted more than a month. So
no.
Less than 30 days. You know, and here's the thing, you know, with Drew Brees' situation. And I thought he did a good job on the desk as an analyst during the pregame. Is that, you know, those skills don't always translate to the booth. You know, you might think it's logical that it should. You know, by way of example, you can be a guest on a radio show, but it doesn't translate to you hosting a show, by way of example. So the listeners might think, you know, viewers, oh, that stuff's all the same, but it's not. In fact, when you do a radio show, if you're the host or you're the sidekick, that dynamic results in a different performance. So if you're hosting a show, you do perform differently than if you're the person being asked questions or who makes comments, you know, at certain times and, you know, as the quote, co-host. So while it looks very similar, Stephen Graham, I think you would agree that while the differences are nuanced, when you're actually in those chairs, they're quite pronounced.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I know Lloydy has a follow in terms of, more broadcasting related news, but I just wanted to get to the breaking news is the Vegas Golden Knights have announced that they have fired Pete DeBoer. And I think the obvious name, well, I'll get you to react to that, but the obvious name a lot of people speculating, would Barry Trotz be interested? And I know Darren Dreger reported at the time of that firing, that Trotz could potentially also want a front office type role. But I guess initial reaction to the firing of Pete DeBoer and who could potentially be a good fit there.
Yeah, I guess this news just broke like 10 minutes ago. And I guess not a surprise. I guess, you know, insofar as that looked like a good team on paper, this is really Vegas's first season that you could characterize as a failure insofar as their roster vis-a-vis expectation. I think they expected more. But at the same time, they had, you know, they had injury issues. So I don't know to what extent this firing was fair, but in the press release, they were saying that they had, you know, discussions with DeBoer for a couple of weeks and thought, you know, heading in a different direction was probably a good idea. So perhaps it was a philosophical disconnect, or there were issues with respect to where both sides saw this team heading in the future. But certainly Trotz could be a logical choice to fill that position, because he has been a coach that has enjoyed a lot of success.
A couple of, I know McCrimmon was technically born in Saskatchewan, a couple of Manitoba guys as well, possibly, if you wanted to kind of connect the dots. And just some other news from about a half hour before that, Lane Lambert, speaking of Trotz, he was Barry Trotz's assistant in Nashville, in Washington, and on the island, and now he's the new head coach of the Islanders. That's the direction that Lou Lamoriello has decided to go in, as he is promoted from within to find his new head coach. And let's just pivot there as well. We know that Vegas is, you know, salary cap jail, and so they've decided to move on from Pete DeBoer. To me, it's not all about this, Eric, but this has to be at least part of it. This is easier to do, right? If you want to affect some change with your organization, it's much more difficult to try to alleviate yourself from all these salary cap restraints, which we'll still have to do and make some tough choices. But to me, I think the Vegas Golden Knights started with the easiest thing they could do if they wanted to make a change. And, you know, it doesn't have to always be the coach's fault, but when you come through a season like that, goodbye, right? And this happens quite a bit, even if it's not totally deserving.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the old expression, you can't fire the team, so you might as well fire the coach. And he hasn't been, you know, coaching the Knights for a long period of time. I think it was just like a couple of years, right, or a year and a half. So it's not as if he's been the head coach of the Knights for a long time. I just wonder, you know, oftentimes before you fire someone, you have to think of the replacement. And this is in any sport, in any position, coaching or players. And you ask yourself, okay, what's the alternative? If we are to replace this person, the person that we get, the successor, is this an improvement? And I wonder to what extent Barry Trotz being fired from the Islanders encouraged Vegas and incentivized them to fire DeBoer, because they were aware that maybe they had a possible replacement that, from their standpoint, would represent an upgrade. And so you wonder to what extent that, you know, those dominoes kind of fell in that sequence. But, you know, Vegas has got salary cap issues. There's no doubt about that. But they're also a good hockey team. And if they can stay healthy, they can do some damage. But from goaltending up, they lost a lot of games to injuries.
Speaking of good hockey teams, the Maple Leafs, real good hockey team and came real close, but ultimately didn't get to where they want to be. And I think a lot of people have seen since the loss in Game 7, a lot of people have suggested leaving it, running it back with the same group because they're that close. Although the one kind of change that I've seen that people would potentially go with would be behind the bench with Sheldon Keefe. Like, what do you think of that, especially with Barry Trotz currently being available? Is that something that would push the Maple Leafs over the top? How would you react to the Leafs and that potential possibility?
Isn't it funny that Trotz being fired, probably the best thing that ever happened to him, he'll probably, you know, get a significant increase in his salary, you know, so long as he actually agrees to coach. He might just sit. Who knows? But here's the thing about the Leafs is they had a really good regular season, 115 points. They won twice as many games as they lost, even more than that. They played Tampa in the first round. Like, that's a good team. That's a team that you talk about dynasties. Right? Is this team, if they win another cup, this is a modern-day dynasty. That's a good hockey team. Yeah, Vasilevskiy didn't play well. Yeah, the Leafs blew a lead, you know, in the series, but they were playing a really good team. I guess I understand that the consecutive losses in the playoffs and so far is not closing. I get all that, and I get this legacy and this culture that seems to have evolved that they can't close, don't have a killer instinct. I get all of that, but they played a really good team, and there's so much parity now. I don't know, like, to play the Lightning in the first round, that's a tough matchup for the Maple Leafs, and every matchup in the East would have been a tough matchup for any team. So I don't know if you need to tear things down. I think the coach comes back, the general manager comes back. Maybe you try and acquire another player or two that's got more of that killer instinct to kind of help complement, you know, your goal scorers. Tell Nylander to play a bit more defense maybe. But I don't know if this is a situation where you tear it down. They still had a really good season.
All right, last one for you, a different direction, but it's a topic we've covered somewhat before, and that's Kyrie Irving. Interesting, within the last few days, reports have indicated that, you know, Nike will not be renewing his deal when it expires within a year. He's got a new kind of shoe coming out here, but that it sounds like that's going to be it. And this is worth millions, right? These are big, big-time deals, these shoe deals in the NBA. And you know where I'm going. The obvious question is, how much money do you think Kyrie Irving has cost himself with how he handled things and only able to play the away games, and basically the GM of the Nets after the season saying we need people that are going to be available? You know, beyond he's got an option left on his actual contract, but how much money do you think he's cost himself total?
I think Kyrie fatigue has resulted in multiple millions of dollars being forfeited by Irving. He recently effectively referred to himself as the demagogue or messiah, and I think just people have had enough of this self-indulgent, borderline narcissistic NBA player. Yeah, he makes 30+ million a year, so he's not incentivized to change his behavior. But my goodness, you play on a team, you put your teammates first. You tell this to kids when they're like 6 years old, moving up. And there's nothing about Kyrie that strikes us, at least, as he's a strong team player. He's driven by self-interest. He's driven by misinformation. I remember he declared the earth was flat a while ago. When COVID was at its peak, had no clue what we're doing or what we're dealing with. He goes to a party, everybody that gets infected. I think that brand owners, and I act for these guys, are risk-averse. And his shoe is a nice shoe. It's done really well. But I think even a company like Nike that tends to be ambitious and adventurous with respect to their business model, I think they are even saying, we wanted the Kyrie business because we've also had enough.
All right, last one for you. Real quick on Drew Brees. If he's leaving NBC, and it seems to be the case, do you think part of the negotiation, if you, Drew Brees, would you say, all right, I'm keeping the hair. That's part of the deal.
What do you mean his hair? Is it like a hairpiece?
Oh, man, come on. Creature, right?
Like, is it?
His hairline totally changed when he arrived on the desk for NBC. It was like, what's going on here? It was night and day.
Yeah, it was like Costanza when he had the piece on.
Exactly. It was Costanza. Good point.
Look, the most obvious hair piece in sports history for me was when the Canadians traded Bobby Smith for a fourth-round pick. He was at the airport, and there was something on his head. I don't know what it was. But it was this, like, an animal had just nested on his head, and it was the most ridiculous looking hairpiece, like an 80s hairpiece. But I guess I'm looking now at photos, but those were like plugs to me. No.
I think NBC paid for them, right? All right. I think it was part of the deal.
I guess.
Yeah. There you go.
Maybe. Look, I know when Joe Buck had his plugs, he lost his voice. Maybe when Breeze got his plugs, he lost his brain for broadcasting. I don't know.
Oh, look at that. It all comes around, eh? There we go. Okay, Eric, you enjoy the rest of your Muggy Monday, and you and I will do it again with Offside coming up later this week.
I love you guys more than Breeze's bald head. Take care.
All right. Eric Macromella, out of order, on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. We'll take a break, and, yeah, with breaking coaching news. Creature, we're going to delve into that a little bit more, and let's not forget about the old conflict with Robin Leonard. You know, is this dismissal, is that part of it? With DeBoer v. Leonard and how that played out, and now DeBoer is out as head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. We'll touch on it all coming up next on In the Box on TSN 1200. So, Creature, this is Kenny at the drink back of the day before he get fired over the half wall out into the street. Get out of here. Goodbye.
The drink. Did you hear Kenny last week?
I heard a little bit about your show last week, yes.
It was good, and he was in a good mood.
Kenny was solid all week.
But, like, it was noticeable. Like, on this side, it was like a different split personality on this side of the glass. Ask him. You can ask him. I'm not making things up.
Oh, it's a different – there's doors into one studio and then the main studio where Graham is. This one has bad mojo. Graham has good mojo. I don't know what it is. I can't explain it.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm trying to keep your spirits up here. I'm doing the best I can.
Oh, he's in a good mood today.
No, it has nothing to do with you or anybody else around here. It's the door. I'm convinced it's the door. There's an aura around the door. Somebody put something on it, and every time you walk in, it's just, it's not
we
the same.
We need a priest. A little exorcism on the door?
Potentially.
Then you'll be all good? Okay. Try to figure that out. All right, I'm looking at the official news release right here with the Vegas Golden Knights. So, Vegas Golden Knights general manager Kelly McCrimmon announced today, May 16th, changes to the team's coaching staff. Pete DeBoer has been relieved of his coaching duties. We want to thank Pete DeBoer for his commitment to the Vegas Golden Knights over the past three seasons. Since joining the organization, Pete and his staff have guided us through some of the most unique and challenging circumstances we've witnessed since our franchise entered the NHL. After lengthy discussions over the last 2 weeks, we believe the new coach will put us in the best position to succeed next season. So no mention of the assistants in that, but you would assume that will be up to the process of whomever they bring in as their new head coach. Usually that coach wants to bring in his own people, so we'll see how this plays out here. Do you think, Creature, is it too much of a stretch? Because it's not fair to say it's one thing, but at the very least, maybe they took in under consideration the whole Robin Leonard thing that got really weird late in the season between Pete DeBoer and the goaltender with his injury situation?
Yeah, I think that's got to be part of it. I think there's probably a number of things, but just not meeting expectations both in last year's playoffs. I think a lot of people expected them to... What you saw what they did to Colorado after the first two games, the Avs looked incredible, and then Vegas was just, they completely eliminated all of their speed and skill and took over that series, and a lot of people, I think, expected them to kind of cruise past the Canadiens and into the Stanley Cup final. So failure not getting into the postseason this year when you fired Gerard Gallant to bring in DeBoer to do exactly that. And again, like Eric mentioned, I know there's obviously injuries and tons of stuff at play here, but they didn't come close to meeting expectations, and that's part of it. I'm sure the Robin Leonard situation, Marc-Andre Fleury before that situation, could have potentially just been another check mark on the list as to McCrimmon deciding to pull the trigger on this move. And I think a lot of people would say that maybe the GM deserves a lot of the blame too, just given where they're at with the cap and how things were handled and the Dadonov situation. But I can't, honestly, I think we speculated last week or whenever the Trotz news came out, I think it was last week. We were just trying to speculate where he could land if he does want to be a head coach. And we speculated Vegas before this news even came out, just because the expectations they have in the desert to win a Stanley Cup and where they're at with the age group of that core, they need to win. Barry Trotz would be an upgrade there. I don't know, like Dregs pointed out when Trotz was fired, maybe there's interest in Trotz or wanting to have a front office role, but I think it's a number of things, and I think all eyes are on Vegas now, see where they go.
Yeah, the moment Trotz was fired, I think that was part of the speculation that we all had. Would his availability trigger other teams to make moves they might not have made?
Maybe we've got
our answer with the first one here, right? That's pretty big that DeBoer's gone. He's got a year left on his deal, by the way, 3.25. So Pete DeBoer will still collect on that, and we'll see where he eventually lands. But he is out as the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. And you raise a good point, because Pete DeBoer, it, you can point to Fleury, what happened with that. You can also point to what happened recently with Leonard. We're not there, right? We're just on the outside seeing. We're all making the same types of observations. It's weird, right? Was that handled properly? Who knows what really went on behind the scenes on that. But we do know that this is an underachieving team. And you know what flows downhill when things don't go well. Coach is gone. But you'd have to think that Kelly McCrimmon and, you know, who knows what Bill Foley's thinking, the owner, and George McPhee, who's that layer just above McCrimmon when he stepped upstairs and made McCrimmon the general manager. It's been an absolute mess with going for it. And I think we can all appreciate it's been a wonderful story. You know, right from the get-go, they make the Stanley Cup final in the first year, ticking off everybody throughout hockey. Like, nobody's upset that they're struggling around the NHL. No question about that. But it has been a pretty cool story to be that competitive that quickly. And they were never a developing team. They've just been in go mode since day one. And I think every fan base, that's eventually what you want your team to be. You want your team year after year that we're not rebuilding. We're still good enough. We know we're going to be a playoff team. We're going to go for it. We're still doing it here. You know, you can only sell the rebuild so long. Like here in Ottawa, it's been a while. It's time for this team to start to turn the corner. Well, Vegas, they've been that competitive team, you know, since the get-go. But now with the way this season unfolded, you just look at that roster and the whole Dadonov situation didn't help either with optics. It's they've got some issues on their hands. Is that the coach's fault? Coach didn't put that team together. So you would have to think that's next up here, Graham. Like if Vegas does not, you know, get off to a better start, we could see a management change by Christmas. That has to be next.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. We touched on the Dadonov situation and just whether the moves were good or not, but just bringing in Eichel at that money, Petrangelo again, like great defenseman, but you keep making all these moves expecting to get to the Stanley Cup final, and when you're missing the playoffs again, I know there were injuries and things that play to that, but still they underachieved. If they do the same next year, how could you not look there, just given everything that's played out since? And yeah, I said, like, coming down the stretch, not rooting for anyone to lose their jobs, but rooting for Vegas to miss the playoffs, because what's the fallout going to be? How many massive trades are there going to be? They have to do things anyways because of their cap situation. Add that to the fact that they missed the playoffs and they're supposed to be winning the Stanley Cup. Like, you know there's going to be tons of fallout in the desert, and it'll be interesting to see where else they go from here and what they do.
All right, and an abbreviated show today. If you're just joining us, we haven't been on long because we had the World Championship game. Canada beat Slovakia 5-1, so Graham and I hopped on just before noon with producer Kenny Walls, but we haven't really, like, I thought we'd just be diving right into the weekend that was the Stanley Cup playoffs and looking ahead to round two, but we've had the coaching news, and Lambert is now the new head coach on the island. DeBoer is obviously out in Vegas. We've had some breaking news to hit on here. But I do want to get some thoughts from you, Graham, and the listeners at 12-1200 on what we saw. Well, we had five games, a series that went to a Game 7 over the weekend in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I don't know. Like, I was so excited to watch the first round. The first round's always the most exciting round, just because, especially the way they did most nights of the staggered starts, it was just a lot of fun to sit back and watch all the hockey and be a fan, and just how great the teams were, especially in the East, that made the postseason, were the 8th seed at 100 points. And I was thinking, could it possibly live up to it, to what I was hoping for? Yeah. You've got five of those series going to a Game 7. And to cap it last night, we had two games yesterday that went to Game 7 overtime. You can't ask for much more than that, Graham. It was awesome to see. We had great individual storylines. Jake Oettinger turned in one of the best postseason goaltending performances that we've ever seen in the game in a losing effort last night. And just in the series, as how badly Dallas was outshot, outchanced, outshot attempted. And Oettinger is the only reason that they got as far as they did, and it took a perfect shot from Johnny Hockey to end it. Just a phenomenal first round. And now what do you do for an encore? We got some really nice matchups coming up in round two, which begins tomorrow night. But I just feel I'm not downplaying it. I'm still interested. I just don't know how you top that.
Oh,
how
man.
Awesome that first round was.
I'm more interested in the second round. Like that was an awesome first round. As you said, five games going to game seven, two to overtime, four of them were one goal games, and the other one was a 2-0 game where it was 1-0 throughout the entire game. Edmonton and McDavid were bonkers throughout that game, and then just couldn't beat Quick until McDavid went all world or whatever the top level of what he's doing is to make it 2-0. Like, they were all close games, all unbelievable, but it's set up. I'm more excited, honestly, about the second round because it's set up like the ideal matchup, like in each series. And I know, like, obviously you can make an argument for other teams like Pittsburgh or Toronto, but you get the Battle of Florida, which might have been the best series last year in round one. They're gonna do it again. You get Carolina and New York, which I think that'll be a fantastic series. So would the Penguins and Canes as well. Colorado, St. Louis. I've been bullish on St. Louis entering the postseason. I thought the winner of them and Minnesota could have made some noise. They're so deep with all the 20 goal scorers they have. Like their third line is loaded, and it's a third line taking on Colorado, who obviously is trying to make a major statement and get over this hurdle of the second round. And what a start it was to the postseason for them. And then you get the Battle of Alberta for the first time since 91. Like you couldn't have made four better matchups. I'm more excited about round two than I was the first round of the playoffs. I can't wait for it to start, and I'm hoping that they all go the distance.
Well, there's that's our web poll question of the day, brought to you by the Tool and Equipment Store. And you know what? All these matchups, you can make a case. I don't think there's an incorrect answer here. Now, there's one series that is quite a bit out in front here, but you could just put these four matchups on a dartboard and say, yeah, fine. Which series has the best chance of going the distance? Is it Lightning Panthers? Is it Oilers Flames? Is it Rangers Hurricanes? Is it Blues Avalanche? I went Lightning Panthers. Just for the heck of it. Ask me again. I'll pick another one.
Yeah.
It's that difficult for me. And by the way, Lightning Panthers are second at 31.3. Leading the way is Oilers Flames, 55.2. Third is Rangers Hurricanes at 10, and Blues Avalanche is at 3.5. I think I'm with you. Each and every one of these series is a compelling matchup, and each and every one of these, I have no problem saying if they all went seven, it wouldn't shock me.
It's crazy. Like, with all due respect to how Dallas stayed in that series and Ottinger, who best goaltending performance I can remember in a long time, nobody wanted Dallas Edmonton. Like, you had to have the Flames take care of business, and now you get the Battle of Alberta for the right to go to the West Final. That's insane. And we've went over each match. I can't wait. I guess to answer the poll, oh my God. I'll go Rangers Hurricanes. I guess I'm just feeling that one right now in terms of going seven. But I they could all go seven. Like, how could you make an argument that they won't? I think a lot of people would probably expect the Avalanche to kind of roll, but that Blues team is insane. Like, everyone's talking about Toronto's path through the Atlantic Division. What about Colorado and Minnesota and St. Louis? Those are three of the best teams in the league, and they have to go eat through each other just to get through the second round. Those are awesome teams.
Well, there's so much we can get to here. It's such a short show. So I want to get some thoughts from you on Pittsburgh. 3-1 series lead. You're down to your third string goaltender in overtime of game one. Jarry came back and played the game seven yesterday. Crosby goes down a couple of games ago with an upper body injury. He comes back yesterday. He was not the same player that he was. He was dominant earlier in the series. Crosby, he wasn't even good in the faceoff circle, which is odd for him yesterday. And Rickard Rakell came back, and he had been out with injury. So, you know, the Penguins had three guys come back into their lineup. Jarry was noticeably limping every time he left the ice as well, coming off that broken foot. Valiant effort, but attrition caught up with them. Let's face it, if Crosby doesn't go down, Penguins win that series, right? He was having that kind of an individual impact on the series. That's unfortunate. Hey, but that's hockey. That's the way it goes. So I'm not taking anything away from the Rangers. But now, and these questions come up, what's next for the Leafs? What's next for the Capitals? Okay, what's next for the Pittsburgh Penguins? Letang's up. Malkin's up. Are we talking end of the era kind of stuff here? I know that Elliot Friedman today has offered some more thoughts on that. He's reporting that they were talking 3-year term with Malkin so he and Sid could go out together, could not agree on money, so we'll see if they still can, and apparently not even close on Chris Letang. So can you imagine if Malkin and Letang are gone in Pittsburgh? And that'd be it, really. It's the era would be over, and Sid's not going anywhere, but he'd be kind of by himself with the link to the great teams of the past.
Man, hate to see it from a Crosby perspective. Like he was having such an unreal series, and he had a great season too. And he still deserves the respect as being one of the best in the game. So you root for him, but especially in this market, like I think there's a lot of people that hate Pittsburgh more than even maybe a Toronto and a Montreal, or at least close to that level because of the history between the two clubs in the postseason. But you have to have the respect for Crosby. Other than that, you kind of love seeing Pittsburgh exit in the opening round. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in Pittsburgh. I know there's a lot of people speculating a few months ago that Letang and Bergeron and every star French Canadian is going to end up in Montreal next year, right? Like, isn't that what's going to happen? They're all going to sign with the Habs.
Sure, let's go with that. But anyways, every team's got their question marks. But you know, with we're talking about core superstar players,
legends
for a franchise,
yeah,
multi Stanley Cup champions in Chris Letang and Malkin. And I would say at this stage, Malkin, Letang still got some tread on the tire in that I still think he's a heck of a good defenseman
for sure
in this league. Malkin, we'll see. Like, can he have a good summer and be healthy? And it's all about training. He's been really set back with injuries in the last year or two. So it will be an interesting offseason with Pittsburgh and what direction they end up going in. But doesn't sound like the early reports that it's looking good for either of them to stay with the Penguins after they were eliminated by the New York Rangers.
How wild is that? And where do the Penguins go at that point? Like, obviously they're going to want to try to win still with Crosby while he's there. How do you change all that?
It's not like they're devoid. Like, Gensel's a heck of a player.
Yeah.
And in his own right, of course, it helps. Sid helps him a lot, but he's a really good player, you know, in his own right. But the problem is, it's the cupboard, right? I think they've done a great job over the years of finding value on guys to augment the roster. But you know what always made it work is you just had legit superstar stuff at the very top end of your food chain. You had two Hall of Fame centers, like two Hall of Fame caliber centers playing at that level pretty much the entire time. Let's just start there and see how the rest of your forward group filters out. That helps. And their blue line, underrated beyond Letang. They won a cup when he didn't play. Remember, he was hurt for that run, but Letang has just been such a stabilizer as well. So we'll see. Interesting times in Pittsburgh. When we come back, I want to get your thoughts on, and I think this isn't garbage bag day today, part of it with the Leafs, so there'll be a lot about that. And what's next for the Leafs? That was a great series. Leafs could have easily won that series, but they didn't. And so now the questions get asked again, what next? What do you need to do? How much change do you make here? Who do you pick and choose with? So we'll talk about that. Still to come, in the box on TSN 1200. All right, Graham Creech. Do you still believe in this group? What's the tweaking? What needs to happen? It's a very good team.
Yeah.
Very good team. Year after year, it's a very good team. Easily could have won that series, but they didn't. And now, unfortunately, the Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Riley era, like that's the kind of the core four. They've been through it all. Marner and Matthews came in together and they made the playoffs, the Leafs did, in that first year. And they've made the playoffs every year since. And they've lost the first round in the first round every year since. So you're always trying to get better. You're trying to evaluate. What do you think the Leafs do without maybe overreacting? Because you still have a decent group here, obviously. What do you do if you're Kyle Dubas, your MLSE, and trying to tweak things yet again? And hopefully they're hoping that next year they get over the hump in the postseason.
I think what I'd do is just upgrade. And again, I'm not placing blame on these players for the loss. I just think that they faced better opponents. So I'd upgrade on the Mikheyevs, Kerfoots, Engvalls of the roster. Like the third ish line, and I know that Kerfoot and Mikheyev at times plays on the second line, but the guys on your third line, I'd upgrade. I think watching that series with no rooting interest other than kind of rooting to see the Leafs lose for sure. But like I don't care one way or another. But I was more disappointed in the Stamkos and Kucherov throughout watching that series than any real Maple Leaf. And I think the difference was the experience and the depth. And you look at what Tampa had as the third line for their two cups, and they lose their entire third line through free agency and expansion this year, and then they replace it through trade. And I think that's where maybe the Leafs might be lacking a little bit is and I don't know if it's skill or more of a gritty 200-foot game, like something that like Nick Paul would provide, like somebody in that to fill those kind of role on the third line is where I probably would improve things. I'm not going to do anything like trading a Mitch Marner or anything like that. I guess I could hear a conversation about Nylander, but I think they just need to kind of upgrade the depth of their forward group. And I guess the blue line will be interesting to see what happens. I like that they added Giordano to the roster this deadline. I liked that, but what's he going to do? Is he going to test free agency, and will he be back? So I think you probably want some type of an upgrade on the blue line, and then what happens between the pipes too with Jack Campbell. So I think there's a number of questions, but I'm not doing anything crazy. Like I'm not trading Mitch Marner or anything like that. What do you think?
Well, yeah. In terms of I'm not trading Auston Matthews, I'm not trading Mitch Marner, I'm not trading Morgan Riley. You know, but I would say beyond that, I think I'd be exploring, right, of maybe trying to alleviate some of the other top-heavy issues at the top of the lineup just so I can spread it out and augment in different areas. And John Tavares had a nice finish to the series, right? John Tavares is, what, 31 years old. He's making $11 million a year. He's got 3 years left on his deal. Cash is coming down. He's got a full no-move clause. He's a captain of the team. I still think that's unlikely, Graham, but I'd have that internal discussion. Yeah. Nylander would be the easiest one just because he's the youngest. He's 26. Or has he turned 27 yet? Anyways, he makes just a shade under 7 on his cap hit. He is so talented. He really is. Like, he drives you nuts if you're a Leaf fan. Dubas has said as much. And we saw it in that series. The snowblower incident against Chernik, you know, had no part of going into the corner. It's like, then he comes out in the third period. Now I know it was garbage time, but he scores 2 goals and provided offense in the series. He's the type of skilled player that I know drives Leaf fans nuts. But you cannot deny the talent. If they wanted to make him available, they could move him. And they'd probably get something good for him as well. I think that has to be a consideration. But you're talking about a team. You're starting with Matthews and Marner at the top of your food chain with your forward group, and they're locked up for, you know, 2 more years left on Matthews' contract. What's Marner got? He's got 3 more years left here. That's if I can start my team with my forwards of those two players, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, what do you do beyond them with the forward group? The two big changes would be, would you consider moving one of Tavares or Nylander? You know, beyond that, it's just like, okay, let's move the deck chairs around here and just change the mix. And sometimes that works. You can just change the mix with your depth players, and they've been doing that already. And they're close. It's not like you're watching them play in these playoffs. It's like, oh, they don't have a prayer in this series. They've been right there, and they just keep finding ways to not win. So you have to have these internal discussions. Oh, it would be a fly on the wall, right, with Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas and MLSE and Sheldon Keefe and the debrief that's going on there. It has to be maddening for them. I got nothing else. That's it, right? Like, it's, I don't know. Like, that's just the forward group. And on D, you know, Riley's new deal is going to kick in. For what he gives you, the minutes he plays, 7-5, nothing wrong with that. That's par for the course for a number one defenseman. That's good. Nothing wrong with that contract. Brody's got a couple of years left at 5. Now, Muzzin, the injury situation, that's interesting. We'll see how that plays out. And with Jack Campbell, I didn't see an issue with Jack Campbell. He's going to get a raise. He deserves a raise. Played well. Vasilevsky's a better goalie. They didn't lose that series because Jack Campbell didn't play well. He played well enough to give his team a chance to win. And it's so funny, isn't it? We're talking about one game in Game 7, about how narrative, how you view something changes on one game. But that's what happens. It's pro sports. Now all the navel-gazing starts all over again because you lost one game at the end of the first round. And it's juicy for everybody else as you follow along. It's juicy to see what the Penguins are going to do. We went through that. What are the Leafs going to do? Vegas Golden Knights didn't even make the playoffs. They already fired their coach with everything that went on there. What are the Washington Capitals going to do now? They've got the aging core. Is there a pivot coming there about what the future is going to be? This always happens, right? But it just seems, because it was so competitive, Graham, in this postseason, don't you feel this? Just because we knew there were so many really good teams, that disappointment was inevitable. Because everybody thought, pretty much, especially in the East, that we can get into round 2 at least. Let's go. Only 4 teams make it, and then you've got 4 teams asking all these questions, and it's not like they're bad hockey clubs. The worst of the bunch had 100 points. And here we are. And as you look at it from a Sens lens, for Sens fans listening right now, especially in the East, and I know we say this every year, you hope that they can make the playoffs, you hope they get better. But when you start to add it up here, how many of those teams will take massive steps back as well to help out?
Well, you've touched on a couple of them potentially. And I'm not saying Ottawa makes the playoffs next year, and there's still a lot that needs to be done with the roster. But Nick Backstrom, uncertain about his future. Maybe Washington takes a step back with that aging core. What's going on with Patrice Bergeron? What do the Bruins do? If the Penguins lose Malkin and Letang, I know that they have the ability to replace those players a little bit, but what happens there? There's a possibility.
All right, your thoughts, always welcome at 12-1200. Standard text message, rates apply. Breaking news during the show. We had a firing. Pete DeBoer, if you're just joining us, he is out, no longer the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights. Lane Lambert was named the head coach of the Islanders in the 11 o'clock hour this morning, taking over for the fired Barry Trotz. And Lambert has been Barry Trotz's assistant in Nashville, in Washington, the Islanders. So he is from the Trotz coaching tree, and Lou Lamoriello has decided to promote from within to be the next head coach of the Islanders. We'll take a break. 1 hour still to come. We're going to kick it off with our good friend Gord Wilson as our Sens and NHL insider on In the Box at TSN 1200.